right, everybody, y'all come on in. It took me a minute to get this damn Zoom started today. It was acting foolishness, like foolishness. All right, let me get my window set up. And as y'all come in, I've got one person already with their hand raised. So let me just go over how things are going to go today, because I bet we have some newbies here. We just had a bunch of women just join Anobias the last week. So I'm super excited for all my newbies. Welcome to Corinne's coaching call. I'm very glad you're here. So this is what we're going to do. Oh, hang on, my computer is like showing me 4,000 different windows. Ah, all right. Number one, if you have any questions, you can put them in the Q&A, and then throughout this call, I will answer them. And if you post them in the chat, you will get members answering questions. So always know that our members are a wealth of knowledge. And if you're a beginner and you're brand new, please let them know, because they sometimes have access to things that you don't know about. So they just need to know you're a beginner, and then they'll know what to tell you and what not to tell you to do. Okay. So let's start with that. And then you just have to raise your hand if you want to come on screen and you want to talk to me, which means you will be in the official recording of this call. So we are going to start with Liz. And then let me make sure I turn my Q&A on so I can see if any questions come in, because usually these days y'all are asking me a lot of questions. And I got Liz coming up. Let me see. I swear Zoom has given me 400 messages today. It's like every time I look over, there's like, it's another message for you. I'm like, how about fuck you? All right. All the windows. They bother the shit out of me. I just can't stand it. All right, Liz, what are we coaching on today?
So I heard some of your call, beginning of your call last week, and I wanted to get coached then, but I had something else to do and I didn't want to like cut it off abruptly. So I have been going through the grief cycle of the body I expected to have when I lost all of this weight. And the body that I have. And we've talked about my loose skin. We've talked about all this stuff. And I'm probably several years out from it because I haven't made it to goal. I'm not in maintenance. Like, there's a lot of things I want to do. But when I tell you, I was so, like, when it hit me that the moment that I was like, I've done so much work, I'm probably going to get upset. And it's
It's
okay.
okay. You cry. I was gonna say you cry every time, so
I
let's
do.
not break our streak.
Yes, that's not. That's not. So I'm like, no matter how much work I do, how much lifting, how much external work I've done with therapists, that no matter what, like, I'm not going to get the body that I thought I was going to have at the end of this. And like, the disappointment and the anger around that was like really real, of like, I've lost 127, 128 pounds. And just knowing that in order to get at least somewhat close to what I want to look like, because I remember you talking about last time, like, you have this image of what you think you're going to get from plastic surgery, but it's not always going to be exactly what you want either. So I was thinking about all of that. And then I just was so mad. Like, for fuck's sake, like, all this work, and I'm still not going to have what I want without having to spend a lot of money, a lot of time. And just, I'm just trying to go through this whole process of like, I'm the alternative, which my therapist brought up, was the alternative, Liz, is for you to be where you were before, to not have loose skin. And you didn't like where you were before. And I'm like, you're right. And I have to get to a point where I can accept this and be okay with that. But it's just so angry about that. And I'm moving out of that into another place.
Why
And
are you mad that you're just mad that you're not gonna have the body you want?
that was like what real, I think the moment that my brain goes, oh, no matter what you do, all the weights you're lifting, it's not going to produce what you want in the end.
Ask you this. I've got two questions. I'm going to save the one I wrote down first. Is how many women are walking around out there, do you think, just in the United States, okay, who could work really hard and have the exact body they want?
I mean, It's probably a very, very tiny, small percentage.
Like what?
Maybe like less than 5, maybe 1 to 2%.
Okay. So you want to be a 1 to 2 percenter.
I want what I had last time I lost weight, which was that I didn't have a bunch of loose skin, and I'm not getting that this time.
Okay,
But yes, you're right.
that's good to know. All right, because that's a very different problem to solve. Then I'll never have the body I want. Right now, we're trying to solve the problem of it's like I'm not going to have the body the last time I lost weight. How old were you?
I started when I was 35, and I probably got to goal when I was like 37. It took about a couple years to get there.
Okay, and how old are you now?
We're the 74 group. I'm 52.
Okay, same age as me. So you're at least 15 years older.
Yes.
Okay, now let's look at the United States again. Of the 52-year-olds like us walking around who once had a body that looked the way we wanted it to, how many of us are going to be able to like say like, and if I work hard enough and I do all the right things, I will look like I did when I was 37?
Probably less than a percent. I mean,
Okay,
there's
so
probably some
you just
anomalies
want
out
like,
there.
so basically you're upset that you're not a one percenter.
I'm upset that I have to have skin removal surgery.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. Think like you laugh about that problem, the other one makes you cry.
Well, I'm so pissed. I'm just pissed. I'm just pissed.
But what are you at? I don't think you're pissed.
I'm
That,
disappointed. I'm disappointed.
okay, and that is what I would tell myself. Like, I'm grieving. I'm mad. I'm angry. The
I
voice,
was.
okay, but you're not anymore. You're realizing I was mad because I didn't realize my goal was to be a one percenter.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. I'm disappointed, not because I'm not a one percenter. Disappointment is natural. And I would just tell myself it is very natural to be disappointed when you're working really hard. You feel like a different person, but you look like this one.
Correct.
Okay. And I get it because I live with this every day. There is not a day that, I mean, before this call, I'm putting on my Gold Bond crepe skin, just rubbing hard with some retinol. You
I
know,
want to
like
try that, by the way.
maybe some Gold Bond is gonna fix this shit. For me, though, it's like hope is eternal. Like I would rather sit around and hope that I like if this helps you, because I have one more question that I think will really unlock this. I have sat around with the body image stuff for so long. And not to sound like, I don't know, that I'm the unique snowflake, but I always feel like it is uniquely hard for me because, you know, I lost my weight when I was even younger than I am. It's not like I waited forever. And I'm not saying you waited forever, but. Like a lot of times my brain tries to tell me like, Corinne, you did this in your 30s. So many women who lose weight in their 30s look so good and they never have to struggle. It's like for some reason that first half of your life just wrecked your skin. And then on top of it, all of my financial security comes from how I look. Now, it also comes from other things like my brain and my ability to help, blah, blah, blah. But if I'm on the internet and I'm trying to get clients and I want people to sign up with me, I better look like something. And so there's this pressure that comes. So, what I've done that's helped me immensely is to decide I can be upset at how I look or and like think that my lifting is pointless and think that this is pointless and why am I bothering and all this other junk. Or I can be on the other side and say, I would much rather try as hard as fuck to look the way I want, even if I know I'll never get there. One, hope feels better. It just does. And I'll try all the lotions and I try all kinds of shit for y'all all the time. Like, I have spent a minor fortune in shit trying to figure out how to tighten things up, do this, preserve that, all that kind of junk. So that's like the first thing I think is just you realizing, like, you are going to do an immense amount of work, and there's no way, there's no human way for you to look the way you want, because you have decided you want to be a one percenter. So it's not that all this work is pointless or whatever's going on in your head. It's like, I have a very impossible goal. And if you want to keep the impossible goal, that means you have to get better at failing at it. You have to be proud that you always aim for it. Like, I would love to be a billionaire. Realistically, I'm never going to be a billionaire, but I like to hope for it. I like to dream about it. I'd love to be a billionaire. That you wouldn't believe how many people I'd take care of. Like,
Same.
oh my God. In fact, Chris and I sit around all the time. We talk about, like, if we had like $1 billion, what would we do? Like, Logan the other day was telling me he plays the lottery. I was like, do not tell your father. Chris is so anti-lottery. He just hates the lottery. But Logan says, I buy my two tickets every week. He says, I just like the chance of it. And I looked at him, I said, what are you gonna do? I was like, how much money can you win? It was like one lottery he played, like, you know, he plays the big one and then he plays some smaller ones. And I was like, what are you gonna do with that money? Because that child hurts for nothing. I mean, he works for us. Every bit of his paycheck just goes into investments because he lives with us. We just take care of him. He pays his food bill. That's what he does pay. Anyway, he listed off. He's got all these little friends that he's met, and they all work at like the Waffle House, and one's a bartender. Like, you know, they don't have no money. And most of them got single mamas with kids. He's got two chicks that he hangs out with all the time. Both of them got kids. And I'm like, now, what are y'all doing? But those kids love him. He's like Uncle Logan. And he was like, I'd take care of them. Like, I'd make sure that they didn't have to work so hard, that they could stay home with their kids and stuff. And that's like me. So I would love to hope for that stuff. It's kind of like with our bodies. It's like, if I'm gonna hope to be something or want something, then I need to remind myself, if I set an impossible goal, then I have to be willing to work hard for it, fail really good at it, be proud of my journey. Like, I have to teach myself that part. It's easy to wish for something. It's not easy to teach yourself how to go about achieving something that you probably won't. But just in the pursuit, I just want you to think about this, Liz, and your therapist was on the right track. You in the beginning of this was so fucking miserable. And she probably is sitting there thinking, I'm so glad that you have to get coached on this. I'd much rather you be getting coached on not liking your loose skin than getting coached on being out of control with food and feeling hopeless and desperate. Because that's where we used to coach all the time.
We did. We
Like
did.
a thousand times. I mean, we should have a Liz searchable selection so that people can watch all of
I
Liz's calls
mean,
over the years.
just the Project U calls alone were, and I do want to say this about myself, like I've not quit. Like I am like I'm still going. I'm still going to the gym. I go 4 times a week. I working on my nutrition, still doing mental, like I'm still doing all this stuff. Like I didn't come to this realization. I was just like, fuck it, I'm gonna quit, which I probably would have done that in the past. And I didn't do that. So that's a really big thing for me is that I didn't, but I'm like, I wanna move past this in a way that is, because I heard the beginning of your call last week of like that it's not coming from a place of hate, that it's like coming from a place of wherever it needs to come from, but it, that it's not hate, right? Like, you know, I lay in bed and I'm like, my fucking quads are so strong. Like, I can feel the muscles in my legs, right? And I'm like, this is so badass. But then I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, I can't see what I feel, right? And I'm like, but I'm still gonna go to the gym and I'm still gonna kick ass and I'm still gonna keep going. But thank you for bringing up this one per, you know, like this part of like, you're right, like the percentage of people that can really do that and get there is very small, but it's like, I don't want this to like be the thing that I just keep spinning around and dragging me down. Like, I just want to be like, let's fucking keep going.
Well, and you just have to, like, the only answer for this is literally every time the chatter starts up. This, you know how they talk about food noise? This is body noise. Man, I should do, ooh, I'm gonna write this down. Body noise.
Yes, it's
Do a
so true.
podcast on
So
this. I'm
true.
gonna coin the phrase body noise.
I love it.
But it's very true. You just have body noise. And you know how, like, when I talk about food noise, I always say, like, all right, when y'all have cravings and urges and you want to eat and you're thinking about, you know, eating cookies and all this other stuff, or even doing that, like, you know, overeating and stuff, it's always a signal that there's an emotional need that needs to get met. That is what the hill we all die on here in the no-BS, and we fix those things. Body noise is no different. So when you are saying, you know, like, give me a thought you have about your body, so we have, like, a real one.
I mean, I look at my like belly area and it's just, you know, it extends out and I have little divots, I guess, in the way like where my belly is, like, you know, it's a big belly. Like, it's smaller than it was when I first started, but I'm like, it's not flat. It's just belly. It's most of it's probably loose skin.
But what do you say about it?
I'm
What's the noise about it?
just like, my belly looks weird. It looks weird. The way it looks compared to my legs, because it goes out and then I have my legs and it just kind of the way it sits. It's the bottom part, like under like my belly button, that area there. And I'm
Okay.
just like, just looks weird.
So let's assume that when you are looking in the mirror and you think that looks weird, that is a signal of an inner Liz emotional need that's going unmet. What would it be?
Acceptance.
And what is acceptance to you?
Just being accepted for who I am. Just as
And who are you?
I mean, I think I'm pretty good, pretty great person. I mean, I think I'm kind. I think I'm helpful. I think I'm thoughtful. I mean, I am also strong. I'm very resilient. I mean, there's a lot of shit that I went through that I look back and I'm like, fuck, like, survive some cool shit, some big shit.
So now when we think about every single time you're kind of obsessing over your belly or thinking it looks weird and stuff, it sounds to me like this, that is really code for, I wish you would think more about who you actually are. Because what's interesting to me is that when you talk about who you are as a person, it makes you emotional and moves you. When you talked about your belly, you talked about, like, I don't know, like I was describing that turtle that I saw on my wall. Yeah, you know, I saw a turtle on the rock.
I think just my whole life, I've just wanted to feel accepted. You know, I just always felt weird, always felt like an outsider.
So I think you've got your work is like, how do I normalize this body? Like, if you're really wanting acceptance, there's only one place acceptance is going to come from, and that's going to be from your mind. And you're saying, like, yeah, I think my belly looks weird, and I also think all these things about myself. There's more to me than this belly. And, you know, I will just say this to be honest, when it comes to body love, it's really hard for a woman to have unconditional love for her body. Meaning, because I think a lot of us don't realize that unconditional love means I love warts and all. So, like, you know, I always use the example. I'll give you a really good example that most of us can relate to. I've got a cat. His name is Nacho, and he's a mad shitter. I walk into the foyer this morning. He has not shit the rugs in at least 3 weeks. This cat has so much diarrhea, it's unreal. I have a fuzzy, hairy chair in our foyer. He got up on top of that and took a fat dump on it. Now, I unconditionally love that cat. Otherwise, his ass would be at the pound right now. He has ruined thousands of dollars worth of furniture at this point and rugs. But we forget that unconditional love doesn't mean that every moment is rainbows and daisies. It means sometimes I don't like something, but it doesn't make me not love you. And I'm wondering if this is more your whole body stuff is here really to show you how to truly love you without conditions. Like, can I not like the way some stuff looks, but never forget how much I love myself? Never make it so bad that I'm in exorbitant pain over it. Because I think that's where I am now with my body is I can find good in it, but I'm not in so much shame and so much embarrassment and so much like dislike for it that it's like it feels like all I can think about, or it's constantly make it like I just feel bad, like I'm not allowed to like any of it because of all of this that's wrong with it. And the other reason why I think it just is hard is just society in general does pump. Like we agree that about 1% of women can look the way they want. I think they say 4% of the world are women are actually what they would call the perfect body and whatnot. But the images we see are like 96% of the images we see. Even when we see plus size women, they're gorgeous. You know, like there was a some Sports Illustrated chick, she was the plus size model. I'm like, well, I'm glad they're doing it, but they also picked a woman who like she ain't got a lipidemia. She's a big lady, but like I would have given anything to look like that when I weighed 250. I looked nothing like that. Everything had a rim, a dimple, a roll, a bulge. And she just looked like an airbrushed goddess. So even when we see women who are, you know, all the sizes and stuff, they're still curating a very washed version of it.
Right. The aesthetic
So,
has to be a certain way.
yeah. And so when I remind myself that so much of how I want to look is based in what other people have said is acceptable, it creates a little bit of space for me where I don't feel like there's just like an ounce of relief that it's like, okay, it's not really that I am such a problem. It's more of I want this because of that. And when I can break it down for me personally, it makes things a little bit more easy to wrap my arms around. I don't get so caught up in how terrible I feel. Like it doesn't just feel like I am just wrong, my body is just wrong, all of those things. So the question I'd written down, I think we've already answered it, which was what body did you think you'd have? That would be an interesting thing for you to explore, is for you to think about, like, all right. What did I think I have? Because I'm guessing that at some point it must have changed. Because if I had to guess, when you started all of this, you did not think you'd have a like a 1%er body. But even just thinking about that could be good. But I think the real question I just want to ask is, have you thought about how you want to define what is acceptable for your body? Like, what's the difference between what society says and what I want the definition to be? Because if you truly want acceptance, this is for all of us in everything, whether you want to accept the relationship you have with someone, you want to accept that this is going to be your job, you accept this is my way, whatever it is, my age, whatever it is. You have to separate the difference between this is what I want because this is what I think it's supposed to be versus if there were no rules whatsoever. This is what acceptance would look like. And then you work towards thinking about that more. Like, and you'll have to do it on purpose in the beginning because the way that we've been conditioned to believe and the way that we have been thinking is always the loudest voice in the room
Yeah.
because it's the habit voice. It's just like, oh, I'm just supposed to run this program. Like, I'm supposed to wake up every day and start this body narrative every single day until you program me different. Because the brain doesn't like, just because it makes you miserable or you want something different, it doesn't just change gears for fun. It's like, oh, let's do that. Like, no, it really thinks it's supposed to do its job every day of this until you actively change it. And it takes a while to change it.
Yeah. And I haven't spent a lot of time there. I mean, I've spent a little bit of time, because I do go back and forth of like, well, what if I do so much work and I get to a place where I'm like, I don't even want the surgery. Like once I get there, maybe I
Well,
won't.
you probably saved about 100K.
Exactly. 'Cause I'm like, I know this is going to be expensive, but and then my brain goes back and forth of like, no, I want this. And then I start trying to talk myself out of stuff. Like I almost talked myself out of not coming to camp. And I was like, no, you don't know. Just things like that that start to come up. And I'm like, why would you like take this opportunity away from yourself? Like, why would you do that? And not like in a shitty way, but it was like, oh, here's this old pattern coming up of like, you feel bad about this, so then you want to take everything else away from you. And it's like, that's not who I'm becoming, but it does show up. That shit still comes up. It's like, how like the boogeyman. It's like, I'm waiting around the corner for you to come around all feeling good about yourself. And I'm like, God damn it.
Well, and you just have to think that's probably just a natural response for you and for a lot of people, especially if you've been through trauma. Feeling good is not safe
Yeah.
because, we associate feeling good to being dangerous because it's somebody or something could take it away. And so we spend our lives trying not to feel good because we convince ourselves that, like, the worst thing that can happen is feel good and to be taken away from us. And I think the worst thing that actually can happen is making your life not feel good in an effort to never have good taken away. So you end up just living more of your life miserable. It's not a protection mechanism, but it's probably just one of those things that, like, when we talked about what all are the emotional needs going unmet and the habits that run for you, it's like, oh, you clearly see that pattern now. It's like when I start feeling really good and I want to do other things, I just have to stay on my A game that I'm going to follow through now. Whereas in the past, I would have just taken myself right out of it.
Exactly. And I'm like, no, and I'm doing a lot more singing. That's like a big thing. I'm like, I love singing and I'm like getting out there and singing with more groups. And when I start to feel that, I'm like, we're still going to sing. I know how you're feeling right now, but we're still going to go sing, so I've been doing a lot more of that stuff of not letting the shitty thoughts keep me home or keep me from canceling or not doing stuff. And I'm like, we're going to keep going. And so, I mean, there's a lot of things that have changed, but this body thing was just really pissing me off. Like, and like the whole thing was pissing me off because I'm like, I mean, the reality is like, I'm in a totally different place. I've done amazing work. I'm like, the last in-body scan I have, I've lost no muscle, even through fat loss. Like, like I'm doing all the things and I'm like, let's celebrate that shit that
And
you're.
you'll have to do it on purpose, though. And I think that that's not just for you, that is for everyone. Our brains are not wired to think the positive things at first because our brains are too skewed to, like, I've got to keep you safe. I've got to keep, like, I need everything to just stay the same, even if different's better. It just doesn't trust that stuff by nature. And so, if you want to feel better, y'all, think better, you have to consciously tell yourself things all the time. You have to be such a good catcher of duty thoughts. It's like, oh, I hear a duty thought. Oh, let's think about it like this. It's just like if you had, so I saw the turtle on my walk. I also saw a mama duck and two babies. And she was walking and they were following her down the greenway. And the babies kept trying to wander off. And she was just like, murr, murr. You know, she just kept like trying to get them to like, toe the line here. That's the way we are with our thoughts. You're the mama duck. Like, your job is to make sure that the baby duck thoughts follow along, which means a lot of times your brain's trying to go in all these directions. It's like, nope, come on back, come on back. And you do that long enough, then what happens in your brain, it's not that all those thoughts go away. Your brain, number one, gets really good at now catching thoughts and then automatically correcting them. It's almost like it becomes autocorrect. Like, it just is like, oh, I like, here's a shitty thought. And it squiggles. It's like, are you sure you want to think that? Because I'm very used to you redirecting me. Then eventually, these newer thoughts just start popping in all on their own. And it's not, I just always try to tell people, like, I'm just so tired of telling myself to think new things. I'm like, really? So the alternative is you don't think new things, you just keep your bullshit. Because that looks like it feels fucking miserable. So I would rather be tired of telling myself good things to think than to be sick and tired of myself because I only think negative shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, we
Exactly.
have to get on the path, y'all. And then
And I,
eventually that will habituate. Go ahead.
no, I was gonna say, and I think that that's the thing too, right? Is like that the tiredness is the same.
Right.
Whether I'm going to bed tired because I'm redirecting to good thoughts, or I'm going to bed tired because I've been thinking shitty thoughts all day. Like this one isn't, I'm not any less tired doing this than doing this. And I think as when you said that, it clicked in my brain of like, it's the same tired. It's
Right.
this tired isn't
Except
any less.
one has a positive outcome and the other is like a dumpster on fire going over a cliff. That's the best you got to hope for, you
Yeah,
know?
because the other one has no hope and the other one does. The other one, at least to your point earlier, like gives me a destination that I'm going towards. The journey is clearer, it's more narrow, right? Because the other one has like everything and this journey gets narrow along the way, but it's like the view is better. It's
Yeah.
nicer, like all
Well, you
of
just
that.
have to think, like, if you spent the next 10, like, tell me at the end of 10 years, let's say you and I are talking and we're both 62 and you're still here and we're still coaching. I hope to still be coaching at 62.
We
So,
hope you are too.
if you spent the next 10 years only allowing duty thoughts, you're like, you know what, Corinne, that is some bullshit. I'm so tired of thinking positive thoughts. I don't want to do that no more. So, I'm just going to think what I think. And you spend 10 years doing that, or you spend 10 years correcting your brain as often as you possibly can to think in a new way. At 60, which one would you like at 62, which one do you think has got a better life?
The second one,
For
the one.
sure, because over that 10 years, you've changed how you think. Your brain had, like, anything you repeat over and over again, your brain is desperate to put it on repeat. And if you spent 10 years always saying, oh no, we don't think this way. Oh no, we think like this now. Oh no, this is what we do now. Eventually, your brain is like, I guess you want to think this way. So I should probably start thinking that way without you having to correct me every single time because that's a lot of work and I don't want to do a lot of work. But most people opt for option one, which is, I'm so tired. And they don't even realize that within about 2 to 3 months of doing this, you feel like a brand new person. It's not like it takes 10 years. Like, in 2 to 3 months of just thinking more positively than you do now, you feel like a completely different person. In 2 to 3 months of continuing to feel negative, you probably feel exactly the same or worse.
It's interesting when you did that, like my brain was like 10 years of terrible thoughts. And I was just thinking of like, I'm going to be back where I was when I first started. And then when you were like positive thoughts, I was like, I just could feel my body like smiling, like happy, like I'm going to be doing all these things that I want to do. I'm going to be traveling. Like everything was so big and over here was so tiny. And that was a great way of like my body could feel it. My brain went to those two places immediately. So, yeah.
The only other thing I just want to tell you is for the plastic surgery, here's what I always tell myself. I'm going to get there and then I'm going to decide. Liz, you don't know how you're going to feel at the end. You just don't. Nobody does. Nobody ever knows. Some of us will want it, some of us won't. You may want it today. You get there, and if you do all this acceptance work, you may like, I might not even care. I might find I want to spend my, because plastic surgery ain't cheap. So let's just, if you were just going to do, let's say your, just your stomach, you're looking at a good 15, 20K just about these days.
Right.
You might want to go on a lovely trip instead. You know, you just never know. But you may be like, you know what? I do accept my body and stuff, but I still want to do it. And I want to do it just because I can. I want to do it just because, you know, like I really don't like how it looks. It doesn't take, but you're not saying, well, if I don't change my belly, I'm unlovable. There's a big difference between I'm unlovable and like, I just want to change my belly because I think it'll look different. It'll be a lot easier, you know, in my swimsuits or whatever. One feels light, one feels heavy. Okay. All
Awesome.
right.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye. All right. If anybody else wants coaching, you need to raise your hand. Otherwise, I'm going to answer all these Q&A questions. So I have to look over here because I can't really, it's not big enough in my monitor. Please tell me more about the magnesium supplement you recently wrote about in the newsletter. Do you take a pill or powder form? They have both on the website. Thanks. Susan, I take the pills. So I'm just not a, like, so I take them at night. And here's the reason why I take the pills. I'm lazy as fuck. And I already asked Chris to pretty much take my dishes to the kitchen. If I need anything from the kitchen, he brings it to me when we're eating. And if I ask him to make me one more thing at night, he's probably going to divorce my ass. So I don't do powders because I know me. I'm not getting out of bed. I ain't going all the way in there. I'm not going to brush my teeth again. I'm not going to do any of that stuff. So I have a friend who loves the powder, both powder versions. He says they taste great. I didn't even try them because I was like, I'm not even gonna bother with that shit. So, what I would do is just decide this to me, the pill or powder form, they're just as effective as one or the other. So it doesn't matter whether you do it for effectiveness, it does not matter. But if you don't like swallowing pills, the powders are gonna do great for you. If you're like me and you're just like, I'm too lazy to make myself a drink, a concoction at night, then I would just do the pills. And I just keep mine literally right next to my bed. And oh, by the way, if y'all think I'm blowing smoke up your ass about these, it's the sleep breakthrough and the magnesium breakthrough. If you have an Oura ring and you track like your resilience score, 2 days is exceptional. Just saying. That deep sleep, it's cranking right along for Corinne. It really has helped my sleep so much. And I have a small competition only in my own head with Chris and Jane all the time about like our sleep scores, but particularly resilience, because I always feel like resiliency is the one that's kind of saying, this is how well your body's doing overall. Like, this is how well you're recovering. This is how well you're taking care of yourself, like in terms of rest, balancing activity and rest and stress and rest and all that stuff. So it's always important to me to be an exceptional. And a few weeks ago, we went to Vegas and I went all the way back down to, I was still like in the bottom of strong, like I was hovering between strong and solid, which is the next, there's five levels. And I just about wanted to put a sack over my head, like a Looney Tune cartoon. I was like, oh my God, I am at the bottom of strong. And I was like, I am getting back to Mecca. That is where we're going, right there. So I accomplished it. And then I think Lori put the link inside the chat. So if anybody's interested, it's by Bioptimizers. I love those supplements. I love them. Like I have a completely switched. I used to be a sleep remedy girl. I stopped taking it because Sleep Remedy did a good job of getting me to sleep, but it was never giving me my deep sleep. And both of these are. So hope that answers your question. I'm a teacher. So when school is in session, I get a 15-minute lunch. I have to eat before school at my lunch break, scarf it down. First of all, y'all always talk about scarfing food down. I have timed myself so many times on my lunch. I eat my lunch in about 6 to 7 minutes flat. And that to me feels like I'm taking my damn time. So when y'all say you're scarfing it down, I'm like, well, y'all aren't part of the Crabtree Wright family, which my maiden name is Wright. My mother and my brother, they eat twice as fast as me every meal. I don't give a fuck where we are. I always tell my brother, I'm like, you eat like someone's going to shank you for your food in prison. He's just over there. They just shovel it in because when we were kids, we were always eating in the car. My mom was always taking us from one babysitter to the next. We always ate in the car and we had to hustle. So anyway, y'all crack me up when 15 minutes, like if you've got like 7 to 10 minutes to eat, I call that like in my family, that would have been called luxury time. And then come home to make dinner for my family of five. None of this really lends itself to eat when I'm hungry. You already are eating when you're hungry, Christine. You're doing it right. If you're eating bread, like this is the way that there's a lesson inside of No BS that talks about timed eating, because eating when you're hungry doesn't just mean I'm just sit like y'all act like you're supposed to just sit in a chair and be like, I'm just waiting on that hunger to come. I'm waiting on hunger to just sneak up on and be like, here I am. I'm here. You better eat right now. Like, no, that is not what we mean when we say wait for hunger. So if you can, like, legit, just go with the flow. You can eat whenever you want. You actually can do those things. That's fine. But the vast majority of us, if you got a job and you got any kind of commitments, here's how we wait for hunger. We first look at our daily pattern. So, like today is a good one. I have a lot of calls. I'm recording the new binge eating course right after this. I will not eat again until 4 o'clock today. Okay? I knew I would get hungry sometime between when this call starts and four. I was not physically having my hunger signals at 11:30. But I knew I would have them somewhere around probably 2 o'clock, 1:30. So what did I do? I went ahead and ate what I thought someone who's going to get hungry then, this is what they would eat. This is about how much they would eat. That's called also waiting for hunger. Because what we're doing is we're just like the real crux of the hunger and enough and planning your food. Is this one golden rule or the umbrella rule, which is we think before we eat. So if you know that you get a 15-minute lunch at a scheduled time, then you also know about like when you have to be at work and food's cut off, then you know, okay, breakfast needs to happen here because at some point I would get hungry. So I'm going to eat then. If my lunch is during this time, let's say you're not hungry, but you know that it 2:15, when you got a room full of snot noses sitting around yelling and poking at each other, not paying attention to what you're teaching, but you'd be hungry. You know that during your 15 minutes, that is when you enjoy your lunch because you're taking care of the version of you who would get hungry at 2:15. And then the same thing when you come home for dinner. If I had to guess, if you've been schooling all day, and you didn't just snack your face off before dinner. By the time you're cooking for a family of five, when dinner's ready, I would almost bet you're hungry. If you're not, you're probably just running on adrenaline. But a lot of us want to eat with our family. There's not a woman in here who's overweight because she ate breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and ate because she was thinking about, is this good for me? Is this going to help me with my weight loss? You paid attention to stopping at enough. Not a woman in here is overweight because, like, you know what I did, Corinne? I paid too close attention to stopping at enough. That's why I'm overweight. That's why I got 100 pounds to lose. That's why I got 50 pounds to lose. I've just been sitting around thinking about making sure that I stop at enough. And most of us aren't overweight because we were like thinking through our day logically with common sense, saying, you know what? Common sense says if I'm not going to be able to eat until 1 o'clock, I should probably eat breakfast, even though I'm not hungry right now. Because I know my patterns. I get hungry before 1 o'clock. And if that's when your scheduled lunch is, that's when we eat. I promise you, no one in here is overweight because they used common sense to eat. Now, a lot of us are overweight because we turned our fucking brain off and we ate because we wanted to. We ate because we had a bad day. We ate because we were ashamed. We ate because we felt hopeless. We ate because everybody else was. We ate because it was free. We ate because we wanted to clean our plate. We ate for a million reasons other than just basic common sense. I promise y'all, it works. It works. So take some pressure off yourself, Christina. I think you're probably doing way better than you think you are, but you're putting pressure on yourself like, I'm doing it wrong. You're not doing it wrong at all. As long as you're thinking, asking good questions like this, giving your body food, we have a thing here in No BS. If you're brand new, you haven't heard it yet, but this month our members got a Healthify course where we talk about, all right, here's what you eat when you finish your 90 days in No BS. I don't even give you this course because of one good reason. I want you working on the emotional eating first. And I want you getting good at the basics first, thinking before you eat. Then, when you get really good at that and you get a lot of your emotional eating under control, what normally happens is then women are very interested in, like, well, now I can see I'm not relying on food so much to get through my day, to push through, to feel better, to relax and stuff. Now I'm ready to actually think about some of the quality of my food. And just like I do in everything else, it is the most common sense, basic bullshit ever. There ain't no measuring cups. There ain't no hardcore food rules. We make eating healthy feel like something supernatural. Okay. I did a deep dive assessment this morning. I have a question about the mindset and real skills of weight loss. I'm setting boundaries in my life as needed instead of eating. I give myself a one and need more of a definition for it. So, this is such a good question, and I'm so glad, Darlene, that you're using that because that is, for anybody who's been here past 90 days, that is a real valuable thing that we have inside the membership. More of you should do it. I found it like a few weeks ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, we need to like dust this off and do this again as a group because it's so good. So let's talk about boundaries. So boundaries are where you have like a stated, this is my boundary. And most boundaries we don't tell other people, we tell ourselves. So I always like to teach it like this. A lot of women are like, I need to set some boundaries. It's like we set boundaries with ourselves first, and we get exceptional at honoring our own boundaries for ourselves. And then we decide what boundaries we need to maybe communicate with other people. I don't have one spoken boundary with one human being in the entire world. Not one. Now, I have a lot of boundaries for myself. One of my boundaries is that if Chris is being an asshole, I don't yell anymore. I know my tendency is that when Chris is being an asshole, I want to ass out asshole him because I'm a control freak and I'm an achievement freak and I'm an A type. And it does a lot of damage to our marriage because I act way the fool. Chris just can have a bad day. And so I looked at my pattern This was years ago, and I noticed that every argument ended awfully because I catastrophized it. I made such a big deal out of it. And in my head, and then because I was making such a big deal, like I would think like, he must not love me. If he really loved me, he would never say something like that. Like, I mean, on the littlest of things. And then I would react from that. My catastrophizing, my low self-esteem, my reading into things that were not there. And then I would get so angry and start such big, violent fights that it would sometimes take days for us to even be able to talk again. And so I decided that I was not going to tell Chris, here's my boundaries. Here's the way that you're allowed to treat me and the ways that you're not allowed to treat me. I was like, you know, Corinne, you need to get a hold of your shit first. So my big boundary for myself is I now know when I'm getting angry and triggered. I know what it feels like. I know what thoughts start coming up in my head. I know that my heart races. It goes from like a normal 59 beats per minute to about 120 beats per minute. It feels like I'm exercising. I get a really hot face. In my mind, I'm thinking of everything that I could say to hurt his feelings. My volume gets really loud, and I tend to start wanting to slam things. That's my signal to where I always say, I just look at him and say, I'm telling you right now, I'm pretty upset. I'm gonna go cool off for a little bit. And I do. Sometimes it takes me 10 minutes, sometimes it takes me an entire day. Sometimes I have to go out and Marco Polo my best friend and just get all the piss and vinegar out at somebody who will listen, but she's not invested, so it's not going to hurt her feelings. So my boundary is when you're triggered and upset with your husband, you're not allowed to yell. You got to go walk it off first, think about what's actually happened. And when you feel like you can have a conversation, have a conversation. Because very often, what I noticed is that Chris would be snippy at me on days when he was just tired. And then I would come in a really good mood, and he just didn't want me in his space because Chris is pretty much a loner, and he'd snap at me. And I would make it mean he must not love me, he doesn't respect me. Instead of making it mean, Chris is allowed to have bad days too. Chris is allowed to be tired sometimes. Chris is allowed to sometimes be annoyed when I'm in a good mood and he's not. Trust me, it is, we've never had to go to marriage counseling because I've done work on me. So when we think about boundaries, we want to think about what are the boundaries I need to set for myself? So, like, let's say it's food. Some of us need food boundaries. We need to know, like, you know, when I'm super anxious, I need to like set up a boundary that I don't go to the drive-thru first. I take a new, like, if you leave work super upset, one of your personal boundaries might be I drive home an entirely different way, even though it's going to take me longer, because it's going to be too easy for me to go to the drive-thru. So I'm going to go home first. And then, if I still really want to eat, then I will go back out and get it. That's like a boundary. And then sometimes we have to set like some of the other personal boundaries are things. There's something in my dress that's catching. I'm wearing a dress today, y'all. I know it's big news for everybody. Sometimes a boundary is also like, I don't say yes to things until 24 hours later. So if somebody asks me, and this is my personal boundary because I am really bad to say yes to things and not want to do them because I'm such a homebody. And I have canceled plans on people so much, and I don't like being that person. So I have a new rule that when somebody asks me face to face to do something, to make a commitment to something, I always say, you know what? Let me get back to you tomorrow on that because I'm going to want to check my schedule and I just need to make sure that I can do it. That way, I'm not in the moment getting carried away with people pleasing. So my boundary is not to go tell somebody who's always asking me to do things, you need to quit asking me to do things. You're violating something in me because you're always asking me to do XYZ. What we want to do is say, like, I need to honor my own boundary. I'm the one that keeps saying yes. So my boundary now is I have a rule and I tell people, I'll get back to you in 24 hours and I'll let you know because I usually have plenty of time to think. It's a lot easier to text someone no than it is to tell them to their face. That's why most people will ask you to their face because they know it's going to be harder for you to say no. That is just a basic human instinct we all have. That's not people purposely or maliciously trying to manipulate you. That is literally something that's ingrained in all humans. And so you just want to like think through if you're a one, where are the areas in my life right now, in my life, where I could use some boundaries so that I can set and honor boundaries for myself first. That will fix a lot. Then, if anybody else in my life needs a boundary, I'll set it with them. My dad is another good example. I have a personal boundary. I only call him when I want to. I never call him because I think I have to. And my dad recently lost his third wife, who he was actually married to for 30 years. And of course, in my father's fashion, when he's a solo artist, when he doesn't have a wife, he suddenly wants to be interested in his children. He did that when he was younger, when my mom and him split, every single time he was between girlfriends. All of a sudden, he wanted to be in his children's life. And then the second he'd get a girlfriend, he's gone again. He did that with his second wife. We barely heard from him while he was married to her. And then the second they got a divorce, next thing you know, my dad is like reappearing in our life, wanting to be in it. So he always is texting me, why don't you call me? And he wants me to call him after 9 o'clock at night. And I don't stay up past 8. My boundary is number one, I call when I want to, not because I think I should, and because he asked. Number two, I damn sure I'm not staying up till 9 o'clock at night. Now, I've never told him that. I have told him I don't stay up past 9, but I'll call you when I have time. And if it works out, great. But that I didn't have to go to him and say, like, now look, we need to set some boundaries. You know, you were never really here for us as children. And so, in order for me to feel safe, this is how I need it to happen. No. In order for me to feel safe, I need to have my own boundaries established in my own head. And what am I going to follow through on first? I have to be good at following through first before I can expect anybody else to follow through. Cheryl. Darlene, I'm just so proud of you for doing that. So proud. Hey, Melissa, I love that comment.
See.
Hey,
Hi.
what you need coaching on?
I have been I started Wegovy within the last month. This is my fourth shot. And I had not planned on doing it, but I had been working with a personal trainer, been on No BS and something else. For a year and lost about 10 pounds, but went up and down those 10 pounds a couple of times. And I was dreading going to my regular doctor, who's the ARNP, whatever, because she's a weight loss specialist. I was avoiding her for like 2 years, went to see her finally, because I said, well, she is really an expert, so I need to stop being silly and see her. And I was surprised that it wasn't horrible. She said, you're doing all the right things. I told her about your program. I told her about, the eating too enough and da da da. I told her about my, how I've never, never, I'm 68 years old. I had never worked with a trainer. I love doing it, but I just feel like I'm not having the success I should be having. So she asked me if I wanted to try the shot, because she says, you're doing everything else. So, I think it's a good timing. So she was right. She
happened to have samples, so I started right away. Now, what I need coaching on is, I think, it's funny because I had commented on Facebook, this somebody commented about when you're on the medication, how does no BS go into it? And I feel like it's more relevant because you really have to listen to your cues, not only for weight sake, but for not getting sick sake, right? But my question is about the exercise because something got me a little when I was reading your I don't know if, I think it was the last email about your working out, which I totally admire. I think it's very badass. Everybody who is able to do that is amazing. But then when you were saying how you were tracking your reps or whatever and sending it to your personal coach, then it reminded me of my trainer who I feel like pushes me to do certain things that I don't think as a 68-year-old woman, I'm not looking at getting guns, okay? I'm looking at the muscle, the bone, and I really want to lift because I know that that's important. I just ordered another kettlebell. So since you have so much experience with the weightlifting and all that, how do you think I should handle that part of my journey?
Well, the first thing is whether you're going for the guns or not, the lifting is exactly the same. Muscle has to be overworked in order to be preserved or even to build, which just means that you have to exhaust it and you have to lift heavy. It doesn't matter, like, and I'm going to just say this globally. There will be some women who will understand this, but the vast majority of women don't, and that is lifting heavy all on its own. So, like, if your trainer's pushing you to lift, big weights or whatever, will not get you guns. Ever. Women, like even men, like you can lift pretty heavy. You're just not going to get guns automatically, and you're not going to get big, or you don't have to worry about any of that because it takes steroids to get there. You got to be like pretty much juicing to get big, and you got to be eating to get big. So, like, if you really like. Like, let's say that y'all wanted to do, let's say that me, you, and 50 other ones of us, we're like, we're gonna spend a year. That the next year we're gonna look ripped and we're gonna have like muscles everywhere. We would spend 6 months eating till we're almost sick and lifting really heavy 5 days a week, and we would gain a bunch of weight. So then we could spend 6 months eating not nearly as much, but just enough for weight, for fat to come off really slow to expose muscle we built. Like women, y'all, you lift as heavy as you want. Nobody got to worry about getting big. Unless you're going to eat like an NFL linebacker, you got no worries. Or you're going to go to your local gym, find the biggest guy there and say, could I have some of your Anavar? Just not happening. So, but you with your trainer and stuff, I'm sure they're probably doing exactly what you need, which is, for all women, we have to lift heavy, a lot heavier than we've ever thought we needed to, in order to just have good bone health, in order to have muscle. Because muscle, I want you to think about muscle is like the bubble wrap to the bone. The less muscle you have, the more like think of your bone as like you're a China doll. Remember the little China dolls that were just easily broken and all that kind of stuff? Well, if I had to ship a China doll, I'm not just gonna throw her ass in a box and be like, good luck. Hope you get there all right. No, I'm gonna bubble wrap the shit out of her. And that's what muscle does for us. So when you are working out, and you're working with your trainer, the heavier you go, the more you're going to create the bubble wrap for your bones. And you just get stronger. You'll be able to do more things as you get older. You know, like I tell Chris all the time, he doesn't lift weights at all. And I'm like, well, it's a good thing I am because somebody's going to have to get you in and out of your wheelchair. Somebody's going to have to open all the jars. You know, I still plan for us to go places, so I have to shove him around. I'm going to be able to shove him around.
Wow. Okay. So I'm not, and when I probably expressed it not perfectly, that it's not that I'm against having guns, if that could happen, but it's, I feel like I don't know if there's something else I should be doing as a 60, almost 69-year-old.
How many days a week do you lift weights?
Well, with her 2 days, and then I
Okay.
go to a class one day, but that's
That's
not,
plenty.
yeah,
I
okay.
mean, even 2 good days with a trainer is going to be good.
Okay.
You know, I think most women need 2 to 3.
Okay.
I have like now I do like to lift more than I like to do anything else. So I lift 4 to 5 days a week. I just enjoy it. I do tend to work a little bit more. I've been lifting for so long now. I do like work on some aesthetic goals. Like I do extra shoulder work. I like to do, I'm trying to do more pull-ups. So, you know, like I have to add extra days in, but you know, it's not just for health. I'm combining other things. So that's why I do lift a little bit more. But for what you're doing at your age, I mean, especially because you're on Wegovy, you're doing the right things. Four most important things you can do on Wegovy is do your weight training like you're doing now. 2 good days, and plus if you're taking a class, even if it's not like what your trainer does, you're stimulating. So what kind of class do you take?
It's called weights and balance, so
That's great. Perfect. That I mean, I couldn't ask for any better. The next one is to just make sure that you're getting enough nutrition. So it's you do need to be protein forward. And this is for all of you. I think people think, I don't know how this got started, but everybody thinks that when you're on the shot, that somehow those are the only people that need to be worried about the protein. If you're in weight loss mode, whether you're doing the basics, you're doing Weight Watchers, you're doing a shot, it does not matter. If you are actively losing weight and you're not lifting weights and eating enough protein, your body will prioritize stripping your muscle away before it will strip your fat away. That's just kind of how the physiological stuff works. That's why there's a push. Now, with the weight loss drugs, I think the reason why people went like crazy, got to get the protein, got to get the protein, as if you're the only ones that ever need protein, is for this one reason. It kills so much of the appetite for some women, they're just drastically under eating. So that's why I always say, like if you're on these drugs, you need to be doing your strength training, but you also need to be, you prioritize your protein when you eat, but you also need to prioritize nutrition. Like you need to eat enough. There's too many women under eating on those things because they've lost the desire to eat, and they're, you know, they do look a little like deflated at the end. But almost anybody that loses weight, like all the weight loss surgery people, they went through that. You know, if you just starve your way down, you're going to look like that. If you, you know, you want to be doing those. The other two that I would say that are really important is making sure you get your water in. I do know that those drugs can also make you less thirsty. So you won't have the desire to drink water, but you need to be drinking water. And then this is the last one, and this is the thing that I think is really important. And somebody had alluded to how does it work with no BS? For a lot of women, when they go on a shot, it's the first time ever that all of that food noise and chatter gets turned down some. And if that is happening, for some women, that is the only way they can actually work on their emotional eating. So let's say that you emotionally eat because at night, if you are alone, you think like my best years are over. Like, I don't know, like my mother was talking to her today. I called her and she was saying something about, well, if I'm here next year, my mother is 69 years old. She's going to be 70 in August. I'm like, Mama, I'm like, please quit. I told her, it's like, quit saying that. And I told her, I was like, it ain't because it like hurts my feelings. I said, it's because your bitch ass is likely to live another 30 years. She's in decent health outside of her mobility. She's got real bad arthritis, but like everything else is fine. And with AI, oh my God, it is going to, there's going to be a lot of healthcare innovation, I think, in the next few years. I'm like, you need to start thinking, I'm probably going to be here another 30 years because that will drastically change how you take care of yourself today. If you think you're only your last year, I mean, it's not a great thought to have. So, or like, let's say you're sitting around and you're like my mom thinking, I probably only have a year left, blah, blah, blah. Then you can find your way to food. But if your food noise gets turned down and you just aren't hungry, that doesn't mean that she's sitting there going like, and I'm going to live another 30 years. This is amazing. Like I now have a newfound confidence in myself. What the shot can't do is fix our emotions. And it can't fix the reasons why we were eating to begin with. So if you're on the shot, for some people, it is like, it gives you enough space and room to take a really good look at your life without the food noise to figure out, and here's the things I want to start fixing. So work on that piece too, if there's any of that laying around for you, okay?
Yeah, that's important. That's a biggie.
Yeah, it's the biggest one. I've got a podcast coming out about it in July because I've listened to so many of the GLP-1ers who are inside our own group, and a lot of them talk about how, they're just really glad they're doing this while they're on no BS because they really do understand they are emotional eaters, and taking a shot doesn't fix that part of their life. But what can happen for some people is you start losing weight and you start getting so much relief that you're finally losing weight that the bullshit you used to eat over, it's almost like, yeah, but this over here is so fun. Like, I love losing weight. I love feeling in control of food. And I love all these things that all of this right now, I'm tolerating it because I'm so happy about this. Well, then eventually what happens is you lose your weight and you normalize to it. And the next thing you know, like, now the shit is growing. This is getting louder. And you're just over here, like, I don't have a payoff every week on the scale anymore. I've already bought all the new clothes. Everybody's adjusted to what I look like. I'm starting to adjust to what I look like. So I'm not like sitting around every day thinking, this is great. It's just like, okay, like now I'm in maintenance. And you come off the shot and it's like, and life is just like, oh, by the way, people pleaser, you're not good enough and you should do things for everybody and you should burn yourself out. And then we go back to the eating. Because it was the only thing that ever took care of that.
Well, that's really something. You're blowing me away because I know people who have had surgery, and I'm talking back 20 years ago, bypass, whatever, and they had to do a psychological like clearance, before they had the surgery because they had to make sure. And I'm thinking, with the pill, they don't even ask you anything about, I mean, with the shot, they don't ask you anything about your psychological state with that. And maybe they need to because it really is, it's the same. To me, it's very similar to getting surgery because you're, going a medical route that isn't, the usual. But thank you very much. It's been very helpful. And I will look forward to, I'm away for a week in Orlando puppy sitting for my daughter. So I'm going to do my training FaceTime tomorrow.
Okay.
So I feel good about it now, because I do enjoy it. I really do. But sometimes I just feel like, but what you said makes sense. So. Yeah.
All right. Just remember, you're a China doll. We got to bubble wrap you.
Thanks.
All
Thank you.
right. Bye. All right, let me go back to the questions real quick. I'm coming back to no BS after a battle with Zetbound and Wegovy. I call it a battle because it left worse than when I started. How can I come back to trusting myself and commit to this journey? I think like trusting yourself right out the gate might be too big of an ask. So I always say, like, one, what could you commit to? Like, so I'm actually recording this podcast about, let me just tell y'all what it's about. It's about sometimes what we do is we think we have a big problem in our life when actually what we've created a big problem, and big problems feel almost overwhelming and they feel too big to solve. And the solutions, when it's a huge problem, it's really hard to find the solutions because there's going to be lots of them. And there, because you got to come at it from a lot of angles. So if we can shrink a problem down to something really small and tangible, it's so much easier to get our mind wrapped around the problem. So like in this case, like, how do I come back to trusting myself? Well, the first thing we want to do is we want to make this a smaller problem. It's like, for today, what can I trust I will do? Just today, not tomorrow, not next week. And not the journey. Because a lot of y'all, like, you're at the start. It's like when you're gonna run a marathon, you break marathons up. Like, if you've never run a lot of us haven't run a marathon, but I have. I ran one by myself once. And I showed up, and like the first thing was like, okay, I gotta figure out how to get ready in the morning. I need to know what I'm going to eat and what I'm going to wear and how I'm going to get myself to the start line. I was not thinking about the journey. I was not thinking about 26.2 miles. I was not thinking about the finish line. I was just thinking about, do I have everything I need to get to the start line? Okay, check. I get to the start line. I don't think about the journey. I don't think about all the miles and stuff. I start thinking about, all right, how fast do I need to run for like the first 3 miles? Because the first 3 miles are going to take me about 35 minutes. And if I'm running faster, I'm probably not going to be doing so well later. So I just think about what's ahead of me. So we want to shrink the problem and not think so much about what do I need to do for the entire journey so that on day one, I completely trust myself and I'm fully committed. That is a big fucking ask because you probably have 1,000 doubts and insecurities. You probably have 1,000 ways that you think that you have failed in the past. And so, if you want to fully trust yourself and be fully committed, that's a hard thing to solve. And it's not needed. You don't need to, nobody needs to fully trust themselves to do this. All you need to do is say, like, okay, I'm going to build trust over time, which means, what does that mean to me? If I was going to build trust over time, then today, what are the things that I think that I could say I'll do it and I will do it, even if I don't want to in the moment, even if I don't feel like it in the moment, I know I will be able to talk myself into these things in that moment. Because what do we all know? When we're changing things, very often we don't want to do them in the moment. It's just like if I say I'm going to clean my house on a Saturday, not once have I ever woke up on a Saturday going, "Hot damn, it's time to clean the house. I'm so glad I said I would." I probably almost always wake up thinking, "Fuck me, why did I say I was going to clean the house? I really don't feel like it." I'm going to sit and I'm going to doom scroll a little while, then eventually I'm going to get off my ass and do it because if I got company coming the next day, I'm going to get it done. It wasn't because I committed and it wasn't because I was truly trusted myself. It was because I just knew I needed to have a clean house. I didn't want to in the moment. When I absolutely had to do it, I finally got it done. Period. That is weight loss. I don't know why y'all treat weight loss like it should be any different than any other thing that happens in life, but it is just like any other thing that happens in life. When you are at the beginning of the journey, you need to expect, I'm not going to be committed half the time because I'm scared. Because I get overwhelmed really easy. You need to find what those things are and you need to just say, Today, if trust and commitment is important to me, what can I trust that I will do today? And what is my commitment? Most of you need to commit, like, and if I don't want to, here's what I'll remind myself. When I started losing my weight, because I was at the rock fucking bottom. I mean, I was at my rock bottom. I was in postpartum depression. Never, like, there's only one other time in my life I ever felt any worse than I did that day. And that was the day that I attempted suicide at 17 because I was so fucking depressed and had so much going on that I was just in a fucking spiral. And I know that's not new news to any of you. That was the worst day of my life. And probably the second worst day of my life was the day I finally decided I was going to try again because I was at a crossroads. That day, I felt so bad and I was crying so hard and so upset. I knew that I was either going down the road of my 17-year-old self or I was going to have to figure out how to do something different. I was not trusting myself. And I was not fully committed. The only thing I trusted was that I felt like such shit, I had to do something about it. I trusted that. I was very committed to one thing only, that I was gonna wake up each day and I was gonna figure out for that day, what could I do that day? That was it. I met myself where I was every single day. And when I got really good at being able to talk myself into doing things when I didn't want to, when I got really good at hearing when I was really down on myself and saying, like, no, I don't want to talk like that to myself right now. I want to talk to myself this way because I know what that talk gets me. So I'm going to try this talk over here. Just like if I got on the scale and it didn't go down or it went up, I was like, we are not going to catastrophize. It's like my brain would automatically go, see, you always fail. See, you're never going to lose weight. See, it's going to take you forever. Like my brain wanted to do that. And I would say, like, nope, that is the way old Corinne thinks. New Corinne thinks there's got to be a good reason. We'll see what happens next week. We don't quit over this anymore. And we definitely don't eat over the scale going up anymore. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to sit down and we're going to look at, this past week, is there anything that I can identify that this week I could do a little bit better? That was the only thing I ever needed to ask myself. I didn't need to think about every failed past diet, and I didn't need to think about my journey. I just needed to think about this week. What am I going to do this week that's different than last week? And that is it. So I shrunk my problems. I did not give myself big problems to solve. I gave myself tiny problems to solve because tiny problems get tiny solutions. And especially when you're in the beginning, tiny solutions feel very doable as compared to big ass ones. Kathy, are the newsletters on the website? They are not on the website. They are emailed. If you're in your first 90 days, you have a special newsletter that you get. Post 90 days, they get a different newsletter because they're doing different things. They have access to other stuff, all that kind of stuff. So, your first 90 days, you're getting a very tailored newsletter for where you're at in the program. Our goal is to not overwhelm you. I do not want to just give you everything at once because most people, if they get too many options, they can't decide. So, we keep you on a very straight, narrow track. So, if you will check whether you, no matter whether you are brand new or you've been here 10 years, which some of you have been here 10 years, y'all don't forget we've been around a while. You get your newsletter every Sunday. So make sure you're checking your email. And if you don't see it in your inbox, check your junk folder. Sometimes, even though you've signed up with us, sometimes mail providers will send us to the wrong boxes. So make sure you check it. And if you find us in an errant box, like we're in your spam, we're in your junk, we're in a promotions folder or something, move it to your inbox, open it, and actually click something in there. And that will signal to your email service provider that this is an email you want to be reading and seeing. It gives it a signal to, like, oh, send this to the right spot. We do everything we can on our end to make sure that we're signaling to all email service providers that Like we set you up as what's called a transactional email, which means you're paying for these emails. We don't put a lot of pictures and shit in our emails. That we do everything we can. I don't cuss in my emails. If y'all ever wonder why my emails don't technically sound like me, I can't cuss in emails. Otherwise, they get flagged and sent to spam very often or blocked, especially if you're using like a company email, a company email for yourself. So if you ever wonder, like, man, Corinne's emails are so professional sounding and they sound so not like her. She's never saying bitch, please, or anything in there. That's why. I'm 59. I'm in maintenance. Congratulations. And I work out 5 to 7 days a week, including strength training and either walk or swim for cardio. Which supplement do you think I benefit more from, creatine or the magnesium, if my main goal is help with recovery for my body? It's both, honestly. Creatine is great for every woman. So creatine has benefits not only for muscle building and muscle preservation and recovery. So I take creatine every day. I take it through Thorne. We probably have a link for y'all. I just recently got accepted into Thorne's program, and I mean, they are staunch. So Chris takes a lot of the Thorne vitamins because he had cancer and he trusts them. And Thorne is the creatine that I take from them because we trust all their stuff. But I think women should be taking creatine unless you have a medical reason not to. Every now and then somebody might have a liver problem and then you probably shouldn't be taking creatine, but most women should be taking like five, I think it's micrograms. I'm not 100, it's like five something. It's whatever's on the fucking label. Just do that. I take 10 because they are now showing that 10 is really good for cognitive health also. I have a lot of dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and things that run in my family on both sides. And so I take 10 grams a day for that reason. But magnesium we also need. So it's not like an either or. I just, most people are magnesium deficient in this day and age. And so that's why I'm a big believer in it. It's really good for people who have anxiety. So some of you, if you've got anxiety or like you just kind of stay kind of like this, if you did get magnesium, you can actually take some magnesium during the day. It has been shown to smooth out for some people. We'll put the magnesium link. It's by Optimizers. If you order through me, you get a di there's a discount. I forget how much it is. It might be 20% or something like that. And then you also get Mass Enzymes, which is a bottle of their another one of their supplements, which it's a good supplement. I take it. You take it before a meal. It helps you break down protein so that you're getting more bang for your buck in your protein, essentially. But it's not one of those things where I tell people like, now that's a must-have. It's a nice to have. It's, you know, I work awful hard in the gym. It is why I take it. I'm like, any edge I can get, I'm getting it. So that's just me. But the magnesium we all need, it will help you sleep better. It also is really good for pooping. If you have any problems pooping, magnesium is really good at making sure the duty shooter is flowing smooth. I have a nice, healthy one every morning. My grandmother would roll in her grave if she heard how much I talk about fucking shit. She hated talking about poop. And I swear to God, me, my brother, and mother talked about it every day of her life. And we still do. I answered that one too. What weight are you using on your arm exercises? I'm really trying to push weights during my workouts. All right. So this is different for everybody, okay? What weight I push does not necessarily mean that that is going to be equal or. I curl 20s, so biceps 20s. I don't really like, I do a lot of different tricep work. Tricep is the biggest muscle in your arm, which is the back muscle. Most women want to work their bicep. It's a smaller muscle. I do a lot of tricep work, but I'm right now doing working on body weight tricep dips. And so I use the machine and I'm down to 30 pounds counterweight on that. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't really do kickbacks. I don't like them for my elbows, don't like kickbacks. They make them cranky. So I do a lot more of just other types of tricep work. Shoulder presses, If I'm doing like 15 or more reps right now, she's got me doing like a lot of shoulder presses, and you got to come all the way down. Like basically, my arms have to tap the sides and go all the way up because I'm trying to build this area too, my lats for my pull-ups. I'm only doing 20s, but I can shoulder press 35s if I'm doing 6 to 8 reps. It's just getting them up is the hardest part for me without, I've got a cranky shoulder, so I have to be really mindful. And on legs, it just depends. I do Romanian deadlifts, somewhere like sometimes it's 40 pounds, sometimes 50 pounds a piece. I do dumbbell RDLs. If I'm doing front squats, I'm doing usually at least 50 pounds. I have a hard time getting it up is my biggest problem. I have just a cranky shoulder I have to pay attention to. So sometimes my legs are, I could do more. If I'm doing a leg sled, right now, I'm only doing 90 pounds per side on the leg sled. That's plenty for me. So it just really depends on where you're at. Some stuff I go real heavy, like back work, I can go super heavy on. Like I row 50s. Like if I'm doing dumbbell rows, I'm rowing 50s. I mean, I just can, and I can do that for 8 to 10 reps pretty easy. Not like easy, but that's like where I can get to failure and fatigue. So I just have stronger body parts than some other. I'm almost 70, I weigh 180, and I work out 4 times a week. I eat about 130 grams of protein, 2 upper and lower. I think you're doing great. I can currently leg press 230. I think that's amazing. And arm press 35 pounds. You're doing amazing. Like, girl, Susan, you just need to keep on going. You were just like my dream at your age. So I had weight loss surgery and the food noise went away. Now I'm 18 months out and it's back. I'm terrified my weight will come back and that's why I'm back in OBS. Yeah, we need to work on the emotional eating, Sally. All going to be emotional eating for you. If food noise comes back, that means the thrill of the weight loss is now finally gone. The excitement, the feeling of control, the feeling of like all of that is gone, and now we've entered fear territory, which means what I would tell you is you don't need to worry the weight's going to come back. You need to say like, oh, now I'm going to work on all the emotional eating. I wonder what goes on in my emotional life that could use some work so I get to just feel better. Like don't, th it doesn't even have to tie to eating. So this is stuff I would definitely take to ask coaches and just say, here are areas of my life where I worry and I have overwhelm and I feel pressure. Like, let's just start with the top three. Like, what areas of your life do you feel like maybe sometimes you feel judged? Like, all of us have emotional weight on us. And that doesn't always have to be physical. Sometimes it's just emotional weight. Like, a lot of us are pretty happy in general, but very often there are areas in our life where we're just like, you know what? I might not be eating over it, but it's not as amazing as it could be. So, like, there's some people who are like, I know I've got things to work on. I have overwhelm. I have anxiety. I worry what other people think. I'm really hard on my body. Like, I'm like all these things. And then some of us are pretty happy and we're like, we can't complain. But you know, we can't complain, but you know what we're not doing? Celebrating the shit out of it, loving every minute, feeling gratitude. Like, ah, every time I look around, it's chef's kiss for my life. Why? Why not? Why not feel amazing? And that's like stuff that we can all work on. In my food journal, do I include things like milk or for me, V8 juice, which I drink after a workout? I would include it in my food journal just so you know that you're having it. I don't think it hurts. I mean, why not is the real question, because it takes what, a hot second to write it down. Do I ask the same questions? Do I need this? I would, like, if it's like when it comes to like liquid calories, there's nothing wrong with milk and there's nothing wrong with V8. I just always say, like, your reasons for having it. If you're having it because you're like, I like to drink a V8 because it's the only way that I get in a decent serving of vegetables, which I know Lori Clary's on here and her husband, he drinks V8 because Bill Clary does not eat vegetables. Oh, I just totally ratted out Bill Clary. I mean, a potato, he eats a potato. So We have a running joke. In fact, I'm going to see her this weekend. We're all going to Vegas. If he orders a hamburger, it's basically like he wants meat, cheese, bread. Like, don't put any of those, don't even put a pickle on there. Why would we even pickle? So, but if you like it for that reason, or if you like milk because you enjoy, like, you're like, you know what? It gives me good calcium, like, whatever it is. I just want you to like your reason. Just don't be mindlessly drinking and eating things because you've not re-questioned it in a few years. That's the only thing that I would say. But I would always track stuff so that you just know what you're consuming. I'm Vegas bound next week to see the New Kids. Oh my God, Mara, I wish I was going to a New Kids. I'm Vegas bound next weekend, but I am not going to the New Kids. I'm going to the pool all day, all 3 days. But I would totally go see New Kids. And Lori, this is not for you and Bill to suggest that we'll all go. Chris would not go. Like, he would die. And you know me, it's really hard to get me out of the hotel, much less my room, past 5:30 at night. And I'm sure if New Kids has a maybe a 4:30 showing or a 5 p.m. showing, I'm up for it. Any midline restaurants that you would recommend to eat at? I'm doing my protocol for next week. Honestly, Mara, I don't eat out. I eat pretty much room service at the hotel we stay at. I tell you what I would do. I would probably post that in the Facebook group and tell them what your budget is, because there's a lot of people who've gone to Vegas who can tell you lots of places. I'm not a big eater in Vegas. Like, we'll go to a couple of like really nice restaurants this trip only because it's my birthday weekend. Well, but not next weekend, but the weekend after is my birthday weekend. But we celebrate mine and Bill Clary, the non-veggie eater. Our birthdays are just a few days apart. And so every year it's a tradition that Jane and her husband come out, Lori and Bill, and then me and Chris. We all go to Vegas for the 4th of July weekend and we do go out to eat. But when I'm there, usually we don't even go out to eat. So I'm like the worst at giving that advice. In fact, the last couple of trips that we've taken, we had Jersey Mike's brought in a big long sandwich and we split it. So 2 nights we were literally just eating Jersey Mike's and chips for dinner. This sort of ties into what you're currently talking about. I've been in No BS for a while, but sort of lurking and not really doing anything. When I first found you, I was doing really well, but my commitment waned and now I've gained all my weight back. I feel overwhelmed about how to start again. You are making it a bigger deal than it is. I always find this amazing that if, like for a lot of you could start something and do really well. But your story will be that was a terrible idea. It's like, why not say, like, oh my God, I'm really good at starting things and doing really well, even if it's just for a little bit. So the only problem I need to solve, because I'm a really good starter who does really good for a little bit, I only have one problem. When I get to that moment when I'm emotionally eating and I'm hard on myself or whatever, I just need to work with us coaches during that time. That's the small problem to solve. But a lot of stuff, y'all like we'll have like, I don't know, 20, 30 diets that you've done over the course of a lifetime and did really well. And your story is, I'm such a loser. I can't keep the weight off. Instead of, oh my God, I am excellent at getting started. In fact, I get enthusiastic sometimes. Like, if you're feeling overwhelmed about where to start, you weren't overwhelmed the first time. You're only overwhelmed this time because you think you did it wrong. Instead of giving yourself credit for being really good at getting started. So, I know my whys and I know how to do the basics. Great. My brain is telling me this is something I can put off. How can I get back on track? We need to know why your brain, like, why do you think you can put it off? Like, when your brain says, we can just put this off, it's probably saying that because when you say, like, okay, why do I want to put it off? Like, why not just start right this second? I already know the basics. What is so awful that I need to start later? It's probably because your brain is going to say something like, well, it's going to be really hard. And and the last time you failed at it. Remember. So your brain is really just saying, let's put this off because the second you start, misery begins. So why would I ever begin something miserable? That's why we need to tell a different story. We need to like really say, like, what is so miserable about starting today? Why not just start today? What's the worst thing about waiting for hunger today? What is the worst thing about like paying attention when I eat and stopping at enough? And if I don't stop it enough, what's the worst thing about going to ask coaches and saying like, "Hey, I tried to stop it enough today and I didn't do it. And when I and because I was paying attention to why, here's what I heard. Here's what my brain was saying in that moment. Can you help me figure this out?" Like, that's a tiny problem. That's all we have to do. Y'all just need to make things a lot simpler. Y'all keep trying to make things hard as hell when you don't need to make it hard as hell. So, if I was you, Lindsay, here's what I would do. There is a program called START. Don't go back to the No BS course. You already know the basics. You don't need that. START was designed for someone that's gone through the No BS course and they either got off track. Or they know the basics really well and they've kind of gone into autopilot and they're not really doing it and they're ready to like, you know what? I need to start this again. And so I wrote Start this year for this exact purpose. So if you've like you're starting all over or whatever, but you feel like you understand the basics, you do Start. Because what it does is it briefly explains the basics and then you spend 2 weeks at a time for over the course of 8 weeks working on one basic at a time in a very simple way. So go start that like immediately. And as they say in the Three Stooges, immediately, if not sooner. I've covered that. Can you suggest a way to find a good, reputable trainer to work with via Zoom or some virtual way? I mean, the best way would probably be to go into the exercise group or into the Facebook group and just ask people, is anybody working with an online virtual trainer? There are lots of them out there. And just lean on your No BS sisters and say, like, who's working with somebody like that or who has found someone like that? And then get a referral. That's how I would do it. I'm working with my girl, I never speak to her. Like, she basically sends me a bill, $150 a month. Sends me workouts for 4 weeks and then I track in my app, but we never speak. And she barely, like, if I ask her a question, good luck on me hearing 3 or 4 days later anything. But I'm also very self-sufficient. I don't want to be interacting a lot. I am a low needs client and her workouts are killer. I know that if I do them, things are going to work out well. But I would just ask some people. But I would not recommend my trainer. She's zilch on accountability. She is hardcore. Like, you just got to get in there and do it. There's no excuses. The only time I really talk to her is when I know I'm going to be out of town and I just explain, hey, if you see me doing workouts 4 days in a row, like this week, I've got to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday because I won't be working out in Vegas and I have to do four strength workouts a week with an optional five. I'll just text her, you'll see four. There won't be any rest days this week because I'm going to be in Vegas Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'll be coming home Monday. I'll restart on Tuesday. Do you have any thought work for dealing with chronic pain? I first would go to our video replays if you have been here for more than 90 days. We have, like, if you just search in the arc, like in the library for chronic pain, we have coached on this many times. So there are probably replays that you can watch where we talk about chronic pain. The bottom line of chronic pain is there is physical pain, and then there's the emotional pain that we put on top of it that makes it a lot worse. So when we separate out, here's my physical symptoms, and here's what it's like. Here's how I am making this harder than it has to be. It doesn't mean you need to be happy about physical pain, but we want to look for if you're throwing a pity party, if you're saying things like it shouldn't be this way. If you're in chronic physical pain, it's supposed to be that way. Saying it shouldn't is going to make you feel extra gross because it's like lying to yourself that reality should be different. It's like, no, you're in reality. We need a way to think about reality. We don't want to be arguing with reality because when you argue, you always lose. You can't win the argument with reality. So if you are just telling yourself, like, this is pain and it feels this way in my body, that's a very different conversation than I wish I didn't have this. I shouldn't have this. Now, those are very natural thoughts, but they also leave you in a lot of emotional pain on top of physical pain. And what we want to do is get really good at hearing them and learning how to, rather than bitch, moan, complain, whine to ourselves, just basically feel terrible about physical pain. We want to get to where we trade that in for compassion, understanding, nurturing of ourselves, patience. Like, if we want to be disappointed, saying, like, I know I'm disappointed in this. Like, having a loving conversation is because what we're usually doing is arguing with our pain. And then we're eating because we're arguing with the pain. Because food doesn't make the pain better. What it does, what it masks is when I eat, it makes the emotional pain better, which if I'm at a level 10, let's say your physical pain is at a number 7 or 8 on most days. And your emotional pain turns the dial up to a full-blown 10. It's loud as the pain can be. That's not the physical pain, but you've turned it up 3 notches because of the emotional pain of it shouldn't be like this. I hate this. Why me? All that kind of stuff. If we can trade those conversations in for, I understand you're hurting. I know you don't like this. We always get through this, but it is not fun. Like, if we have a compassionate conversation, we're back down to physical pain being a 7 or 8. Is that glorious? No. Is it better than 10? Hell yes. I've worked with my mom a lot on this. My mom has dealt with chronic pain all her life. She was born with deformed feet. She was thrown from a car at the age of 7 or 16, I believe it was 16. I don't think it was 17 because she was pregnant with me. At 16 and like trapped under a wheel. She has fell on ice several times. She has lupus. She has really bad arthritis. She has tons of mobility issues. She lives with, and she's got stenosis of the back. So she lives with pain all the time. There's never a moment my mom's not aching somewhere. And we've worked really hard on how to think about it. She's not grateful for it. I never asked her to be grateful or any of that horse shit. But there are ways that she can talk to herself that alleviate emotional suffering. And that's where we want to get our space. Is there anything that will make my brain ignore the pain when it's happening? Not that I know of. I mean, I don't have an answer for that. There is a program in our library that we did, I believe it was last July, where we had like a pain and mobility specialist come in. You may want to look at that. Can somebody put in the chat what that is? I saw it the other day in our programs. And I think Lori's on this call. So if you can go and search, it's probably in the bonus courses or somewhere like that. It's with Suzy, Suzi, or no, Suzy, I think. I cannot think of what Suzy's last name is all at once. But anyway, her name is Suzy. She came in and she taught, and she specializes in chronic pain and mobility and stuff. And she's also a coach. So I will bet you, if you look for her calls, that she also has some calls in there that will be very helpful. Last question. I tend to increase TBL when I get close to next decade of weight loss. I don't know what TBL is. I probably should know that. I'm 65 since September and close to Wonderland. It isn't like crazy binges like the past, but yesterday I split a Dubai crepe with my spouse and this morning a cookie with my yogurt. Is this more about mind work? I have cut back so much, my cholesterol decreased 60 points. It doesn't sound like you're doing anything wrong. I mean, you're sharing a dessert with your spouse and you had a cookie with your yogurt. When you say, is this more about mind work? I would probably just ask myself, like, is this a mindset issue, or did I just really want to split a dessert with my spouse? And it feels like it should be a problem. Because a lot of times when we've lost weight or when we're losing weight, anytime we eat outside diet standards, what the diet world has taught us, like the diet world is all about, cutting out foods and all kinds of shit. Well, when we do it the no BS way, where we are going to have the foods we like, and we're going to think about them and whatnot, it can feel like we're doing something wrong when we're not. And so we have to, over time, like really examine, was I emotionally eating, or did I just really want to do that? And I like the reasons behind it. So, like, if I split it, let's say that Chris and I leave right after this call, and I'm like, fuck that binge course. Like, I'm not recording it. I'm going to the sports bar and I want to get a blondie today. If I go, and I love my reasons, like, you can film your videos tomorrow and you have not had dessert in a long time. You've been having a hankering. Today seems like a great day to do it. And then I go, I'm not going to, that to me, that's not like emotionally eating. Now, if I went because I'd had a really bad day, and I just didn't want to think anymore, and I'm pissed off about something, and we go, and I say I'm going to have a salad, and next thing you know, I'm ordering dessert, and I'm talking myself into it, but I know at the heart of it, I was feeling this way. Well, I like to ask all those questions, because then I'm like, okay, well, I want to fix what's really going on. And what was really going on for me was feeling overworked. And why am I overworked? Because I'm pushing myself really hard instead of like taking breaks. And why am I not taking breaks? Well, I feel guilty when I'm not taking a break. It's like, okay, what do I have to feel guilty about there? Because it was never about the dessert. It was really like, why do I feel guilty for needing a break? That's interesting. Doesn't all people need breaks at times? And then I can unwind that and I can go to like ask coaches and like talk to them about it. Susie Hatley, thank you. God damn, I could not remember. Susihatley. Thank you, thank you, thank you. That's who we're looking for. So for my last person, go look for that. But I would just, that's what I would do, is I would just like really investigate. Like the cookie this morning with some yogurt, I'd ask myself, why did I want a cookie this morning with my yogurt? I know it tastes good. Like, let's present, like, I always like to tell myself, I'm going to assume that anytime I'm eating something I'm questioning, yeah, it tastes good. That's never the reason, though, why I'm really eating it. I'm eating something that tastes good in this moment because I'd like to feel what? Ask that question. And that will give you the answers that you need. And then from there, you can go to ask coaches and say, like, I don't know if this is a problem or not. So could you help me work through this? Because that's another thing for a lot of you. A lot of times, stuff y'all are doing is just not a problem, but you think it is. And if you're unsure, go to ask coaches and say, hey, I think this is a problem, but I'm not sure. Can you help me untangle this? And then tell them what you're working on. That's even better because now you're like, I just want y'all using it a lot, using it to your advantage, because it will really help you. Okay, that is it. We got through all the questions. We got through all the coaching. I'm out next weekend because I will be in Las Vegas. I think you're going to have, I'm pretty sure you got MJ. I'm not sure. It's either MJ or Kathy next weekend. Then I'll be back. And then for all of you, here's what you need to know about July 12th. That is the Sunday coaching call. That is my birthday. I'm turning the 52 years old. And we're having a birthday party for the first little bit of the call. I will be having strawberry cake and I will be giving out some prizes for live attendees. So if you're here, I have a few birthday surprises and that we're going to send y'all. I'm going to talk about on that call just what this last year, anything I've learned, what I'm proud of. And I'm probably, as usual, going to set some goals for 52 that year. And I'll share them with you, and then we'll just get to coaching and questions. So it won't be a long 2-hour birthday party, although I love a good birthday party, but we are going to do it. So if Do you want to bring something to eat? Feel free. But if not, my birthday gift to all of you, though, is our brand new wellness tracker is dropping on July 1st. The team is right now using it behind the scenes, and we're tidying up a few things. So it is for sure going live because it is working. So our brand new little like wellness tracker app thing that it's just, you don't have to download anything on your phone. It's going to be right on the website. It'll be very easy to use. It releases July 1st, and then y'all are all going to donate weight to me in July as usual, as the way that you give back to me. People always want to send me gifts and things like that. I'm like, don't send me presents. Give me the gift of fat. That's all I want. I want like thousands of pounds. That's what I want. All right. Y'all have a good one. I will see you then. Bye, y'all.